And it's Britton. How can I help you?
Hey, Jeremy. We've got a situation that has really surprised us and needs some help with best next steps.
Okay. Well, nobody likes a surprise. What's happening?
So we've got a child in our school. He's been in our school for years, never been on our radar. And at the start of this school year, he had some, you know, unusual behaviors. Mm-hmm. So teacher did a great job, reached out to the family to find out what was going on. And it sounded like there were few changes, big ones. So they moved to a new neighborhood after the mom remarried. So that seemed to explain what was going on with the struggles. Mm-hmm. But now the family has found a doctor to diagnose the child with ODD, and they've enrolled the child in a private school. The stepdad has told us that they're coming after us for tuition because they think we can't handle his needs. But we've never suspected a disability, and we're not sure what to do now.
Well, let's start by taking a more comprehensive look at this kid's history. And with that, we can come up with some good next steps.
Welcome to Season 2 of On the Call, Ennis Britton's Special Education Law Podcast. I'm Erin Wessendorf-Wortman.
And I am Jeremy Neff.
And we are ready to dig into this call.
These are tough cases because you've got a school that's got this long, well-established relationship, and it feels like, you know, out of the blue, things go sideways. And here, with this particular call, it feels like, well, hey, what changed didn't happen at school at all. This is something at home. So it's kind of a tough call to get and tough situation to move forward with.
Well, and then noticing then in those life changes, necessarily life change does not beget disability.
Yeah, education doesn't happen in a vacuum.
No, it doesn't. No, and I say that not necessarily. It could mean that, right? But you also then probably have parents in that situation via the caller who are like, okay, the things that are out of my control, what can I control? School. I'm going to try to, as best I can, control the school aspect for mm-hmm. my child because that's the best that I can do right now.
Families don't happen in a vacuum either, right? Yeah, I'm envisioning this like the Brady Bunch, except instead of like the architect dad who just like can summarize the whole episode in like 5 seconds and solve all the problems. It's what was his name? Mike?
No. See, this is why in this pod, you go to the old school references. I go to a little less old school. Just barely little less.
The one with the Olsen twins in it. The family something.
Full House?
Full House.
Family something. I don't know. TGIF on a Friday. It was a great show. You had Urkel starting at 8 o'clock. It was wonderful. Did you remember?
Did I do that?
There you go. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, hey, we'll bring Did I Do That back into this somewhere where things go sideways. So, I mean, what this comes down to, right, at least initially, is a child find issue. So the question is, do we have a kid here? And that applies under IDEA and 504. And under IDEA, it's an affirmative duty both ways, meaning, you know, we can't be like willfully blind to potentially a kid being eligible. Under IDEA, this is something where the kids almost have double coverage, as we were talking before we recorded this. It's an obligation. Always, of course, the district of residence is ultimately left holding the bag. But with IDEA, it's also the district where the child's educated if they're, let's say, enrolled in a private school in a neighboring district.
So if you are the neighboring district and the private school is in your district, you have an obligation to find those children within those private schools as well who would qualify. Only under IDEA, though. That isn't the same under 504, right? 504 is only for districts of residence.
And there's part of this, you know, we're talking about the part we hear about. Nobody calls us and says, hey, we're sending a notice out to all the pediatricians in the area so they're aware of our obligations for child find and help us do this, right? So we're ignoring that part. We're talking more about those individual
kids. Doesn't mean
kids.
It's not important. Oh, there are still notices and policies and all of the procedures that are in the regs that you still need to follow, but that's not, it doesn't make for a great pod. I'm sorry, but if we had to be, so then don't forget to send out your notice annually and post on your website and in a newspaper. Get real boring real quick.
Really quick. And this is very broad obligation under both laws, right? So this is not just those kids that are really obvious to you, but they're the kids that might be homeschooled. They're the kids that might be not showing up on anybody's radar. We have some obligation to attempt to find
those
children.
It's your homeschool.
Children.
It's your fosters. I mean, those are the ones
transient
that I would say.
Transient enrollment, migratory students, yep, everything.
Okay. But with that, I mean, it's not just, you know, finding them. Like, how do you know how to find them? It's not like they're walking around with a sign above their head saying, oh, I'm a student with a disability, right?
Yep.
That'd be really, maybe it would be much preferred.
It's in our creepy future, AI, you know, somebody will walk through some sort of scanner, be like, well, Better watch this one.
Thank you for that very dystopian womp womp. Anywho, so we have to have knowledge, right? And so looking at that as a school district, when do you have knowledge? Can happen at various points along the spectrum in your interactions with a child.
And some of them are nice and easy, right? We foresee there might be a challenge here. Sometimes knowledge, you can't see me making air quotes, but sometimes knowledge is a very specific thing when it comes to a child who's up for discipline, right?
Yes.
So this is kind of adjacent to child find, but it's a really important one. So that's where if we've got a kid that's up for discipline and the parents are like, well, yeah, but you knew Johnny has trouble with ADHD. And we look at it, we would be treated as having knowledge. And therefore that child, and when we say knowledge of the child being eligible, if the parent had requested or expressed concerns in writing to not just anybody at the district, but supervisory or administrative personnel or teachers that the child might need special education related services, probably don't look for, you know, magic language on those. Or if the parent specifically requested an evaluation, or finally, if somebody in the district, meaning like a teacher, other personnel, has expressed specific concerns about a pattern of behavior before that happened, before whatever led to the suspension or expulsion, if we have that, then we're treated as having knowledge. The kid is protected by IDEA unless
we have maybe the canceling of that knowledge. Canceling of that knowledge can happen, I mean, I think in other regards, really where a parent is coming in and saying, hey, I don't have a concern. That can be canceled. Or you have a whole team of data that says, here's why we don't believe that to be the case. I mean, I would really view those two things to be a canceling of the knowledge. If we're going to start an evaluation and an evaluation comes out on the other side of things then, right? I mean, if you did a full evaluation, it right. could cancel knowledge. If you then do the evaluation and the kid's not eligible, to me that cancels any perceived knowledge.
Or if the parent doesn't let you do the evaluation.
Correct.
Right? So they say things, you're like, great, this is what we do next, and they either don't make the child available or mm-hmm. they don't give you consent. That's another way to cancel knowledge. So that's adjacent to the child find issue, but we bring it up because often this arises when a child is up for discipline.
But in terms of knowledge, I mean, sometimes that can be sticky, right? Because kids are, at least from my experience, I was one once. Mm-hmm. I have two. If you consider my husband a third, either one, I'm not sure. Your wife would say the same thing about you, just putting that out there.
She was just complimenting me for receiving her behavior interventions very effectively, just this morning, actually.
Yeah, see, yeah. You're an extra child. It's fine. But it's not always a clear sign, right? It is mm-hmm. not always, oh, well, you know, obviously this means you have this diagnosis or you should be eligible in this category. I mean, you often just have times where kids are in and of themselves a little maladjusted, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not as if it is, if it was as easy as a book, everything would be, we would all turn out the same.
Right.
But we don't. And it's because I don't think in a lot of situations knowledge of a disability is so very clear cut. And at least the courts, U.S. Department of Education have been pretty clear. And what they've said knowledge is, now it has to be a pretty clear sign to establish that you have knowledge and then therefore have the obligations under IDEA and 504 for evaluation and possibly plans and things of that nature.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's really fair and actually leads very nicely into our case today.
Oh, I love when I can set you up so nicely. It was a softball.
Yeah, it was. So this case is out of Tennessee. It is from March of 2023. And the situation we've got is a child moved into the district, a 13-year-old. So speaking of socially maladjusted, we've got a court decision where the court said by nature, middle schoolers are socially maladjusted.
I'm going to remind myself of that here in a few years.
Oh, you won't need to remind yourself. Your children will take care of it.
I know.
So this child moves in from out of state. So kid moves in from Illinois. And leading up to that school year, the parents had reached out. Like, I mean, to their credit, they reached out. They said, hey, can we tour the school? We're worried about the transition. This is a big move. You know, we don't want our child to struggle. And it's not clear that, like, their outreach was – I don't want to say it wasn't well received, but the school initially said, well, we don't really have tours.
Well, it could also have been if it was in the summer, right? I mean, yeah. Their schools are closed. We don't have tours at this time. We'll talk to you in August.
Yeah, and as we always say with these cases, especially when it's a very fresh case, we don't have all the details. Nope. We don't have all the facts, just what's in the decision. Bottom line is parents just show up and the school accommodates them. And they say, okay, yeah, let's see here. Here's our facility. And the parents, again, express their concerns. Even before the school year started, the parents reached out to the counselor for the building and said, hey, we want to talk to you a little bit. But I will say they held back some facts. So additional facts, the child actually was receiving some private therapy and counseling, even though his paper record that the school received didn't show any IEP or any 504. The parents were doing a lot on their own, and the child was adopted, which can have some challenges, and in fact did in this case. Okay. So kid shows up, and we get the two-week honeymoon, right? And that's not unusual. And so he gets through those first couple of weeks, and then things start to get off the rails a little bit. He got an in-school suspension for arguing with some peers and refusing to follow a teacher directive. And the parents followed up on that saying, hey, here's a little more information. So the information starts to trickle out from the parents. We want to let you know he was adopted. He's had some challenges in the past. We're doing some things. But again, this is a child with no IEP, no 504, reasonably successful in school when he lived back in Illinois.
Well, and we're also not talking about a kid who, when enrolled, had no prior school record. You're talking right. about a kid, and I'm not talking about disciplinary. I don't know that we have that from the facts of the case. We have a kid who at 13 came with a school record. And so if there were other concerns from Illinois school district, one would think they would have at least come across in the sharing of documentation and records into the Tennessee school district, because I mean, that's our obligation, right? And so they would have had, oh, we might have seen some things in the grades or in the attendance, or there would have been maybe a referral package somewhere. And none of that was there. So maybe the Illinois' lack of knowledge was then impugned on this Tennessee school district as well. I think that's fair.
Oh, yeah. No, there just weren't red flags other than the parents reaching out. And I mean, there's a lot of parents that reach out
but
and have concerns.
They reached out with that slow trickle, though,
yeah,
right?
They did.
I also know, I love in one of the notes of the case, we put down that, you know, they started, hey, we're real concerned about these grades in early September. There are no grades in early September. I don't even care. In high school, you don't have grades then, right? So how can we have concerns about grades that probably don't exist? We're probably still getting into our routines and our habits within the classroom, right? We're setting up our little mini society within those four walls of 20 to, I don't know, 28, 30 kids within that classroom. That needs to be established first before we're establishing how does a kid learn?
Yeah. So it was about a month into the school year when the teacher first reached out, one of the teachers, the child, and to the parents and said, hey, you know, I actually have some concerns. There was really no effort on this recent test. And the parents kind of pounced on that and like, well, why, you know, we've been saying this. Why haven't you said anything? The teacher said, well, hey, look, we got parent-teacher conferences coming up. And so reading between the lines, I think there was just a lot of recognition on the part of the school that it's difficult as a 13-year-old. And I can say this as one that moved as a 13-year-old to an entirely new district. It's tough. We don't expect things to go smoothly right away. So the teacher said, hey, come on in for parent-teacher conferences. The trouble is, like, the very next day, the child got in-school suspension again. So again, no elaborate, no expulsions or you know, removal from school suspensions. But that night at home, child fell apart. And the parents actually had him hospitalized after that. Right, yeah. So during that hospitalization, parents reach out to the school, start communicating even more. That trickle is turning into more
good.
Of a flow.
All right, so we got a faucet. We're turned
Absolutely.
On now. We have information. That's helpful. But is it any helpful information about really what's going on with the kid? Because to my knowledge, it looks like we just now said, hey, medical professional said 504 is probably appropriate.
Yeah, we got one of those. So you wonder, was it the prescription pad, 504, or what? But the bottom line is the school's paying attention now. Yeah. And in fact, when the kid came back, they said, okay, here's where we are. We got a fall break coming up, and we want to have a good solid 2 weeks of observation using this plan that we're going to have for a 504. Why don't we plan on meeting on October 30th? That's about 2 weeks after we're back from the fall break.
Parents, I don't love that. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I don't love that. Because at least the way when you read the case, it sounds like they required the 2 weeks.
That word was used
and
in the
that
testimony.
That just seems icky.
Yeah. No timelines in 504, right?
Yeah, no timelines. But so after fall break, I don't even know, do we even get to fall break?
We get to fall break, but the trouble is almost right away, he's cursing out a librarian. Come on, dude.
Librarian. Yeah,
we don't do that. And arguing with peers again, which got another in-school suspension. So the school's like, they're not stomping on this guy until he observes a fight, some other peers. He wasn't directly involved in it, but he inserted himself as the adults came to break it up.
Did he insert himself because he didn't want the fight to be over? Is that what happened?
You know, the record doesn't show.
Sounds like it. Because he had criminal charges, right?
Yeah, he did.
Disorderly conduct.
Resisting arrest, that sort of thing. So it didn't go well for him.
Okay.
And the family says, well, and the school, let's move forward with our meeting mm-hmm. that we already had scheduled on October 30th. He's out of school for the 2 days between that incident and okay. the meeting. And the school at the meeting says, well, we think a next step might be, because they'd already done some like agenda stuff earlier on, like mid-September, trying to help him understand what his day would look like, give him some predictability. Well, we think a next step, given how serious this was, is we have an alternative school in our system. Why don't we try that and continue to, you know, implement some accommodations? Family was concerned. They said, look, we want to investigate private school options. We're worried that will kind of block him out of those. So we're withdrawing him, and they homeschool him the rest of the year.
But it's not an easy homeschool, right? I mean, at least from the record, it shows that he was, what, he was hospitalized twice during homeschool?
Well, during...
Or that was the following school year.
The following school year.
So homeschool the rest of that school year, yep. maybe 6 months or so, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then the following school year, he's in a private school,
right.
hospitalized twice, residential facility for several months. I mean, the kid has a lot going on. I mean...
Big change as far as red flags, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the school initially is looking at this like, ah, this looks like a kid that it's just parents who are understandably concerned too. This looks like a kid with some pretty serious needs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think when you to say there's some concerns maybe at the beginning, but similar to any other 13-year-old child.
Right.
Right. But then we go all of a sudden hospitalization multiple times in residential. We might have had a flag at that point in time, but we don't really get there. Right?
No. And stepping back just very briefly, at the time he was withdrawn, just looking for what are the other red flags.
Yeah.
He had an A, a B, three C's, one incomplete. Nothing very dramatic, like you said, especially that early in the school year. And the other thing during that year, even once he was removed for homeschooling, this district knew we still have an obligation to child find, including children who are homeschooling. So they continued to meet with the family.
Oh, good.
And the you know, some dispute over what was shared in those meetings. But the bottom line is, at the end of that first year of private school, the family filed due process.
Of course.
They want reimbursement, and they want to make sure things are in place for their child to be successful. He continues in the private school for the next year while they're fighting this out. And the hearing officer fell on the side of the school.
Kind of surprised.
Yeah, you know, do tell.
Well, I'm just surprised only because I think I love what the hearing officer did with this, because I think the hearing officer did what they were supposed to do, which is I'm going to go back and I'm going to put my brain, like I'm going to put the school district hat on, and I'm going to put myself back in time into these moments, which is what we always hope as a school district attorney they would do, right? I expected the opposite, which was, well, look at it where we are now,
mm-hmm.
and you should have blah, blah, blah. And in the – sorry, hearing officers, if any of you guys are listening to this, I don't mean that your opinions are ever blah, 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 but we'll go with it because
– yada, yada, yada.
No, it's not a good Seinfeld reference, yada, yada, and sorry. Anywho, I apologize. But I love that the hearing officer went back and put on the hat to say, in each of these moments in time, like, I'm going to forget all that I know is – did happen, and I'm going to walk it as if I am this school. And I think doing that, I'm not surprised. But I feel like not every hearing officer does that. And so looking at the totality of the history is why I am surprised that the decision came out the way that it did. I think that's where I come from.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I got to suspect the school put on a heck of a case. Mm-hmm. And you read the commentary when this gets appealed to court. The court found the school's witnesses very persuasive, even when the court would acknowledge, hey, you know, the parents are right. The information here was pretty informal about monitoring this kid's behavior. The documentation is pretty informal, but the court still found it credible. And then I suspect, and all apologies to the parents' attorneys if they're listening, that their case wasn't necessarily all that well presented. There was an expert witness, for example, who had strong opinions about the academic progress of the child, but then admitted under testimony that, well, yeah, I didn't really look at his record when he was at this school. Well, no, I didn't really look at his Illinois record either. I just kind of talked to the parents. So I think there are a lot of things that came together for this to fall in the school's favor, and it could have easily turned the other way. So we don't use this case as an example of don't worry about child find when behavior escalates, but more a matter of these are all the things that need to break your way, and let's focus on those so they're even stronger arguments.
Well, and I think the fact that the court said – the court found the district continued in their obligation under homeschool – they broke more in the district's favor. I know the court said they didn't like that whole we observed for 2 weeks under 504, but because they kept looking and there was no quote unquote clear sign of disability, the court was willing to then believe what the IHO believed, which was that the school district was okay in that instance. But I do think when looking at practical pointers, right, when we can take this case and other things we know outside of this case and the situations, the thing that I would like to learn from this case, or at least help remind people to learn, is that use of RTI, MTSS cannot be required to delay the evaluation process under 504 or IDEA. And so I think the district got a little lucky in this, that the courts didn't hone in on that because they saw maybe the good faith effort that the district was trying to pursue in working with a family and the student. But I do think it could have gone very differently had a different IHO been in there, or had things maybe spiraled more quickly for the student in terms of behavior in the school building and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that if you find yourself in this spot where it's like, well, it could be a disability, but it could be, you know,
it could just be a 13-year-old child.
Right.
Right.
Then run twin tracks. There's nothing to stop you from that. It used to be the regulations did talk about implementing some sort of RTI type process before doing an evaluation. They don't. They explicitly say the opposite. You could do both. There's nothing wrong. It could be part of the evaluation process.
But what was clear in this case, and I do use it as a way to say, how do we learn and even bolster this case, right? If we can say this case was a winner, which I think it was, it wasn't a, wow, you really, of course you were going to win that. I think it was maybe a closer call than not. We look at the RTI MTSS process. How do we learn best from that? And also, how do we learn best in making sure the documentation shows all of those informal decisions along the way?
Yeah, because you made the point earlier about how the hearing officer did a great job of going back in time and really looking at it from the eyes of someone in the moment, mid-September, kid just moved to the district, the state, a month ago. Looking at it from the eyes of that, a way to help get a hearing officer there is to be able to hold up a piece of paper that was created at the time, contemporaneous documentary evidence, right? Very persuasive, really helps your side have a lot of credibility in one of these disputes.
And so long as the documentation actually has anything in it. It's not held meeting,
right?
Discussed evaluation options.
Yeah. So actually getting into the logic, what was the team thinking?
Yeah.
And that's easier to do also when you're all on the same page. And I think that that's a real key here, training our staff as far as the MTSS pieces like that. Those are all things that are going to lead you in the right direction. So to take it back to our caller then, you find yourself in this spot where you have that long history with a family. One thing is to use that relationship, right? So have those phone calls and those conversations to the family, but don't let that get in the way or blind you from the idea that we need to formalize and document things and make sure folks know what we're doing, what we're not doing, and what their rights are.
But if there is that longstanding relationship, we also have to go to who has the relationship within the school district. Being able to focus and understand that, I do think is helpful. So aside from the case, the caller's call, right, where things have gone weird. We've known the situation, this whole family, for years, but now things have gone weird. Where in your district does that relationship lie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And using that, because this is a scary thing. If somebody's talking about, we're going to privately place our child because you can't handle them, that sounds like they're going to ask for reimbursement or a placement change prospectively moving forward. So using those relationships, but again, always coming back to being clear and formal about the decisions that are made.
But what happens, Jeremy, if you don't have, it feels like in those moments, right, when the caller is calling, right, that time is not on our side.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, what happens? Do we need to speed up? Do we need to slow down? Do we need to, how do we best maneuver those aspects?
Well, I would say looking at the not just the case we talked about today, but even other case law, the courts, that's almost, I don't want to say it's the least of their concerns, but it's pretty low on the list. What they wanted to see is that there was a child-centered decision that was made and that everybody understood why. So that's going to be what's going to be the difference and allow that case to swing your way and frankly in favor of the child too versus going sideways. Thank you for tuning in to On the Call. If you have found value in our discussion and think your educator colleagues would as well, please share this podcast through text, word of mouth, staff meetings, chats in the teacher's lounge. Your support is what drives this podcast.
We work to bring real-life situations and practical tips to each episode. If you have a topic you would like to suggest or want to share your thoughts, please connect with us on social media or email us at podcast@ennisbritton.com.
A quick note, this podcast is intended to be used for general information only and is not legal advice. If you have a specific question, please consult an attorney.
We are looking forward to being on the call with you again soon.